I'm Justin Brooks. I'm the director and founder of the California Innocence Project.
You're listening to Actual Innocence, a podcast spreading awareness of wrongful convictions and issues with the justice system. I'm Brooke, and I'm here with my co-host, DeMarco.
Hello, world. I'm DeMarco, and I'm here to announce that I have a big announcement. I have a clothing line, Purebred, and it'll be out real soon, so stay tuned.
I have seen a preview, and I'm pretty impressed. And we are actually going to add a link to DeMarco's clothing line on the Actual Innocence website, www.actualinpod.com. And while you're at our website, we've also added new merchandise in our shop. So you just click the merchandise link at the top of the webpage and you can see all of our cool options. Plus, Christina, our transcriptionist, has been working hard and we have transcripts available for just about every episode. I think there's about 6 episodes of season 2 that aren't ready yet, but she is amazingly fast and efficient, so I'm sure they'll be ready soon.
Let's take a minute to talk about today's sponsor, ZipRecruiter. Are you hiring? Do you know where to post your job to find the best candidate?
ZipRecruiter posts your job to over 100 of the web's leading job boards with just one click. Then, ZipRecruiter actively looks for the most qualified candidates and invites them to apply.
That's why ZipRecruiter is different. Unlike other hiring sites, ZipRecruiter doesn't depend on right candidates finding you, it finds them. They even review every application to identify top candidates, so you never miss a great match.
No wonder 80% of employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate through the site in just one day. Find out today why ZipRecruiter has been used by businesses of all sizes and industries to find the most qualified job candidates with immediate results. And right now, our listeners can post jobs on ZipRecruiter for free. That's right, free. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/actual. That's ZipRecruiter.com/actual.
One more time, to try for free, go to ZipRecruiter.com/actual. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire.
Instead of trivia, today I want to mention something a little more serious. We talk a lot about the Innocence Conference and what a huge impact that it had on both of us for different reasons. What was your favorite part about the Innocence Conference, DeMarco?
Well, seeing how I'm now on an amazing podcast co-hosting, I'm going to say meeting you.
That was my favorite part, too. If you remember, a couple of weeks ago, we had a guest named Leslie Vess, and we were asking him about the Innocence Conference, and he'd never been, and it turns out he was exonerated before the Innocence Network was created. It feels to me, based on his email, like he's at a place in his life where he could really use the support of other people who have been exonerated like him. So right now, I'm working to help him set up a crowdfunding page to raise enough money to cover his costs to go to the conference.
And listeners, please, go check this page out. You know, go support Leslie. This is a guy that I feel like he needs to be here. He needs to go. He's been out of prison since the 80s, you know, and he was one of the first exonerees around that time. So it's not a lot of, he hasn't met a lot of people like me and the people that I've met, the hundreds of people. So, you know, check out this page, get him, support him so he can get to the Innocence Conference. He needs to be around people that he can, you know, relate to. And I think this would be real good for him. So please go support the page.
I agree. And as soon as the page is ready, I'll put a link out on our Facebook page and on our Twitter.
Well, right now, I have the pleasure to introduce an amazing guy. This guy's doing a lot for his community, my community, for wrongful convictions. Man, big ups to Justin Brooks, everyone.
I represented a woman 20-some years ago named Marilyn Malero. I heard about her story, I read about it in the newspaper, and she was sentenced to death in Chicago on a plea bargain. And I read this story and thought, how could anyone be sentenced to death on a plea bargain? And I went and met with her on death row. And like I said, I grew up in Puerto Rico and she was Puerto Rican. And I said, you know, how did you end up here? And I find this young 21-year-old who just, her lawyer had told her to plea out without really talking to her about any case, the case, and without doing any investigation. And then she told me she was innocent. So I went back and I was teaching criminal law in Michigan. And I told my law students about the case. I said, there's this 21-year-old out on death row. She's got a death date. Be executed, and she told me she's innocent. Who wants to help out? And that was really the birth of the Innocence Project for me, sitting in my kitchen back in the early 90s, working on this case. And we were able to get her death sentence reversed. But the crazy thing is, now 20-some years later, I'm still working on that case. I'm still trying to get her out of prison because I took it all the way to the U.S. Supreme Court and I have not been able to get her guilty plea withdrawn. In fact, just this morning, I was on the phone with some Illinois lawyers who are helping me with the case, and we're about to file another document in the case. So it's been a crazy journey. I started working on the case when I was 29, and now I'm 52 and still working on it.
Where's her lawyer at now? The lawyer
she had? So it's another there's many crazy aspects to this story, and that's one of the craziest is I couldn't find him for a long time. He actually ran out of the courtroom after she was sentenced to death. I finally tracked him down studying to be a priest. What? And he is now a priest in Chicago with a church. And the following fact would have to be changed if a movie was ever made about this case because it's so corny. His name is Father Lynch. It's Jeremiah Lynch. And he's the lawyer who lynched my client by pleading her out, even though she was factually innocent.
Wow.
Yep.
So how long have you been a part of the California Innocence Project?
So I founded the project along with my partner, Jan Stiglitz, back in 1999. And been doing the work out here since then. We've walked 27 people out of prison in California. And then we've had a lot of successes in Latin America with all our projects down there.
So I visited several types of Innocent Network agencies over the past year or so, and I have discovered that there's not a standard type of agency. So how does the California Innocence Project work?
Yeah, so one of the misnomers about all the innocence organizations is that we're kind of, some people think we're all franchises, some people think the New York Project is kind of the headquarters, but really what it is we're all independent projects. And it started 20 years ago with five or six of us sitting in a living room in Chicago where we were all doing our own independent work. And we decided to create this network that grew into what's now the Innocence Network that I've sat on the board of since we started it. So every project is structured differently. Some are built into public defender's offices. Some are freestanding independent 501c3s. And a lot of our projects are built into law schools. And the California Innocence Project is an in-house clinic within California Western School of Law in San Diego. So I'm a tenured law professor at the law school. And my students receive credit for participating in the clinic. They sign up for a year. And they work 20 hours a week in the project. I've got seven lawyers, full-time lawyers, that supervise the cases and work the cases. I have anywhere from 12 to 30 students working the project at any given time. So we're a law school clinic, and we've got three missions. Get innocent people out of prison, use the casework to make these law students into great lawyers, and work on policy and procedure reform in California to improve the justice system. When I started the project, it was just me and my partner. We were both law professors working the cases with a few students, and now we've grown to a much bigger organization.
I was fortunate enough to talk to several of your students last year at the Innocence Network Conference. Jeremy Stock listens to this podcast a lot. He's called in a couple of times.
That's nice. Jeremy is awesome. Yeah, we have amazing. I always say, you know, the exonerees are the heart of our program, right? They're like the thing that motivates me every day. the men and women we walk out of prison. But when I step back and look at the long-term legacy of the project, I think it's the students more that are going to go out there and really change the system. It's just incredibly impactful for them to work on an innocence case, to sit in a prison and look across at an innocent person. And, you know, that just motivates them for the rest of their careers. So I'm already seeing that now that I'm 20 years into this business. My students are now becoming, you know, serious lawyers, senior lawyers, start seeing students become judges and, you know, legislators. And that's where you really start seeing the system change.
That's great. You're doing a lot of noble work as well, too.
I'm incredibly lucky. I think anyone who gets to work in this field is lucky. I know a lot of very unhappy lawyers. My brother is a condo lawyer, and what he does all day is condominium documents. And I get to come into work every day. I work with people I love. I love my staff attorneys. Almost all of them are my former students. I love my students. I love my clients. I'm very passionate about what I do. And it's lucky to get to live a life where you're excited about coming to work every morning. And I am.
And I commend people like you because, you know, without people like you, I would have died in prison, basically, because I had a life in 170 years. But, you know, thanks to the Oklahoma Innocence Project, I was free just a year and a half ago. But, you know, I'm very thankful for people like you. Seriously.
Yeah, thank you for saying that. And I'm sure the people out in Oklahoma feel the same way I do, that they feel lucky that they got to work on your case. Mm-hmm.
Can we talk a little bit about the process which the California Innocence Project selects who it will represent?
Sure. So California has the largest prison system in the United States. So in the country with the largest prison system in the world, we've got the largest prison system in the U.S. So we receive thousands of requests every year for assistance, and we have for the past 18 years. At the beginning, it was very overwhelming. I was sitting with just my assistant in a room with boxes of mail, sorting through it. And we had to develop a process to be able to handle it. So we developed a questionnaire that we send out to everybody that a lot of projects actually around the country have modeled. And it gets as much information as we can about the case. We then get a copy of what's called the appellant opening brief. And that's a very useful document because in California, the appellate lawyer has to write a summary of all the trial evidence. And these are usually 20 to 30 pages. Mm-hmm. And it allows us in 20 to 30 pages get a good sense of the entire case written in an objective point of view. They can't leave anything out under the California rules. It can't be an advocacy piece. It's got to be an objective, you know, evaluation of all the evidence. So we look at what the inmate has written us. We look at the inmate's questionnaire with all that information. We look at the appellant opening brief. We'll call the trial lawyer. We'll call the appellate lawyer. And then we'll do an intake memo. The students will put together an intake memo, given a basic evaluation of the case. Now, a lot of cases get closed at that point because we look at it and just say it's not winnable. You learn after a few years in this business that some cases just aren't winnable under the new evidence standards. And that's been particularly true in California for a long time because California, until this past year when we got a new law passed, California was the hardest state in the United States to get a case reopened on new evidence. And I know this because I wrote a law review article on the topic and looked at every statute. California required new evidence that completely undermined the prosecution's case with evidence pointing unerringly to innocence. And so anything short of DNA evidence was an uphill battle because you had to knock out every element of the case. Whereas most states, the law says, if you have new evidence that would have made a difference to the jury had they heard it, you can get your case reopened. And that's now the new standard we have in California. So we've literally refiled cases that we've lost under the old standard and won under the new standard.
Okay.
And the guys are just as innocent then as they are now.
Yeah. So I actually wrote the California Innocence Project some years back, a decade or so ago. And I was wondering, do y'all just take cases that's in that geographic?
Yeah, so when we started, we were the only project in California, and we were overwhelmed. Then fortunately, Santa Clara started a project, and so they took on the Northern California projects. But yeah, California is the size of a country, so we can only limit to California. The other thing is we're only licensed to practice in California, right? So lawyers are only licensed to practice in their own state. So unfortunately, we can't take cases from out of state. We, you know, we sometimes consult with other projects around the country, and we consult with projects in Latin America, but we actually can't take anything on that's outside California by law.
I follow you on social media, and I see you on Twitter a lot, and I've noticed that you have a Twitter relationship with the governor, and I was wondering if you could tell us about that.
Sure. So several years ago, I had a crazy idea, and that was all these cases that I know these people are innocent, and we've got strong evidence of their innocence, but for some procedural reason, we're not getting any traction in the courts. So I came up with this crazy idea that, you know, well, the first idea wasn't that crazy, but the idea was we were going to file clemency petitions on all the cases because the governor has the power to grant clemency to wherever he wants.
And clemency, can you tell us what clemency is, just for us non-attorneys, please?
So going back to British law, the sovereign, the king or queen, has always had the power to just let anybody go from prison that they want to. And they could give full pardons, meaning your record's completely cleared, or they could grant clemency saying your record's not clear, but we're going to let you go. And we imported that in the United States in our Constitution, and we grant that power to the president for any federal case, and we grant that power to the governors of each state for state cases. So every governor in the United States has the power to release whoever they want from state prison. Most of them never use it. The some that do use it usually use it for political reasons, or they'll do it like in Louisiana. There was a governor who just released everyone who worked in his garden. So some inmates became work. So it's just very arbitrary and capricious the way it's utilized. So I knew Jerry Brown had this power. And Jerry Brown is also a pretty radical guy who will do things a little differently. And he's at the end of his career. And I think politicians at the end of their career are more likely to take risks like this. But then I thought, how can I get his attention? And I came up with the crazy idea that I would walk the clemency petitions from my office in San Diego to his office in Sacramento. So the next day I told my staff about it. I thought, oh, they'll probably try to talk me out of it. And they didn't. They said, that's a great idea, boss. You should walk to Sacramento. So then I had to do it. So I walked from San Diego to Sacramento. It was 712 miles. It took me 50 days to do it. Two lawyers in my office, Mike Simanchik and Alyssa Birkel, walked with me. And we hand-delivered the clemency petitioners to the governor's staff. And we had a ton of people follow us. We had a few hundred people by the time we got there. It was like Forrest Gump. And we got a lot of publicity. It raised a lot of awareness. We spoke at colleges and high schools along the way. But since then, the governor has not granted any of those clemencies. This is his last year in office, so I tweet to him every single day, reminding him we're still here and still waiting. And in the interim, we've actually released five of those people through litigation. So there's seven left, and I'm hoping by the end of 2018, those seven will all be out. Mm-hmm. And it's a very diverse group of people. They're all different cases from around the state. There's Black people, white people, Hispanic people, poor people, middle-class people, all different types of crimes. But the one thing that joins them together is they all have very compelling cases of innocence.
Are you familiar with Tookie Williams?
I am.
Can you tell me a little bit about his case? Like, did he ever write the California Innocence Project, or did you believe he was innocent, or...
I don't remember enough about his case to make an impression on whether he was innocent or not.
Okay.
I know it was an LA case, and it was, I know he was a member of the Crips, but I actually don't remember enough in terms of.
Okay.
I know he was executed. back in 2005. Now, that's the thing is that's so sad about these death penalty cases is you have innocent people who get executed, and then that doesn't get pursued after that because there's no way to pursue a case once somebody's executed. It's case closed. And, but I can guarantee you innocent people have been executed in this country. We've walked so many people off death row, and those are really the lucky ones where there was some evidence to show their innocence. But, you know, there's got to be so many more who just didn't have the evidence.
Yeah, that's got to be heartbreaking.
So we talked a little bit earlier about, I saw your pictures from New York, and you were actually there promoting a television series that's getting ready to come out with Brian Banks. Is that correct?
Yeah. So Brian is one of my clients. He got convicted of raping a high school classmate back, I guess, how long ago is it now? It's more than, he was 16, I say, yeah, I guess it was 16 years ago. And he was accused of this girl of rape. He went to prison. He was one of the best football players in the country. He was being recruited by everybody. He committed to going to USC and playing for Pete Carroll. But it all came crashing down when this girl accused him of rape. He served 6 years in prison. And after he got out, she actually came forward and said it never happened. Hmm. And it's a tragic case because this kid had so much potential. What everyone said, he was going to the NFL, and he ended up having his whole life just derailed by this lie that she came forward and admitted to. So we took the case on, got Brian exonerated, and then he actually ended up playing in the NFL for a short period of time for the Atlanta Falcons. And Brian's a very close person to me. He was just such a young guy. You know, with a lot of our guys, we try to get them back some piece of their life. You know, it's so hard to rebuild their life. But with Brian, you know, he had so much potential. I wanted to get him part of his dream back. So he actually lived with me and my family for a while. We got him a trainer and got him back in the condition to play in the NFL. And he ended up having that dream. So he's an incredible young man. He's incredibly articulate and smart. And now he's got a TV show together where he's going around with a former prosecutor investigating cases of innocence. And
that's great.
It premiered last weekend. It's excellent. And I'm just incredibly proud of him. So I went to New York and we got together and got to watch the premiere of the show together. And then we went on the Today Show to talk about it. Yeah, it's just, it's great. It's great to see, you know, guys who get out of prison putting their lives back together after so much was taken away from them.
Do you think that kids that committed crimes, this is people that who are guilty, you know, kids that committed crimes when they was 15 or 16, you know, do you think that, you know, they've been in time, are they going to change laws for those guys?
You know, the United States was the last country in the world to stop executing juveniles. It is incredible how we've gone so far wrong in our juvenile justice system. It was originally created to try to divert kids out of the system, and now we just sort of automatically wave them into adult court if it's a serious crime. We're housing them in terrible facilities. They're not getting enough educational resources. I think in the long run, yeah, change is going to come. Because I think people are realizing what mistakes we're making with prisons, how, you know, locking people up and not giving them good skills and making people angrier and less skilled when they come out ultimately just makes them go back to prison or not have opportunities on the outside. But it's amazing how this country is so far behind the rest of the world in these kinds of concepts. We really are one of the worst countries in the world for it. And it was proven by the fact that, you know, we were unwilling for many, many years to sign the International Treaty on Children's Rights because we wanted to reserve the right to execute children. And we're the only country who took that position. So we need to get out of this mindset of punishment and get into the mindset of rehabilitation and how we can get these kids out of the system for good instead of getting them in the system for good. And it's going to take a mindset change.
I agree.
I mean, it's just shocking the way we throw you know, throwing kids away with execution, throwing kids away with life sentences. You know, and the thing that's always annoyed me is when you go back and look at the original Juvenile Justice Act and the original cases, the idea was if you're going to waive someone into adult court, it's based on capacity. Yet if some kid does like a computer crime or something that shows a lot of capacity, that kid goes through juvenile court. Some kid commits a murder, they just say, oh, it's a murder, it's an adult crime, go to adult court. But that has nothing to do with capacity. In fact, murder is one of the most irrational crimes there is. People get caught for it, they get seriously punished, it's usually done for bad reasons, it's usually done in the heat of passion, or, and yet as soon as it's a murder, okay, now it's an adult. And it's not the way it should be.
Let's take this still developing brain and instead of, you know, fix it or heal it, let's put it in a punitive system and never let it out.
Yeah, and a lot of those crimes, when you look at the kind of drive-by cases we look at, you know, the ability, if you put a gun in a kid's hand, the ability to just squeeze that trigger when you're angry or trying to prove something or whatever it is, that person can be rehabilitated. This isn't somebody who took a knife and hacked somebody up, or the fact that we treat that all the same. Sure, it's the same that a life was taken, and I respect that, that's a horrible cost. But if you're looking at the individual and saying, can we turn this person around? Can we make this into a person who can function in our society? It's just very different, very different. These kids can be saved. And by throwing them away, we just punish ourselves as well, because we're all paying the cost of that over and over again. Yeah, and when you look where a lot of these kids come from, I mean, it's just no surprise that a lot of kids join gangs when you look at the lifestyle they're in. I mean, you're living in a neighborhood where if you don't join the gang, you might get beat up every day, and a lot of them don't have good, strong role models. They're coming from poverty. They don't have support systems, and so they look to the gang for support system. And then when you have no power in your life, holding a gun in your hand gives you some power. I mean, it's clear where this stuff comes from, and it can be turned around by them being empowered in other ways. But we have to care enough to want to do that. And right now, there's just not that political will. You know, in the Donald Trump era, we're looking at people just going back to lock people up, punish people, throw people out of the country. We're not really thinking through the long-term impact of these policies.
I would like to talk about Wrongful Conviction Day. Okay. So last year, the California Innocence Project, they shared an ad. And do you know who face they used for that ad?
Was it your handsome face?
Yes. I don't know how my face was chosen out of all the, you know, exonerees, but I do thank you. And I just want to, you know, personally send a thank you and to everyone who decided to use my handsome face.
I mean, you got a great smile, man. That person who chose it was me, because I was going through all the photos, and I think that was a photo taken by my wife at the Innocence Network conference.
Oh, wow. And, thank you, man.
A great photo. So yeah, it's great to, you know, that kind of joy is what people want to see. I mean, it keeps us, you know, your case and who you are and your life coming out of prison is what motivates all of us to do this work. That is what it's all about at the end of the day. So, you know, thank you.
And because y'all chose that, you don't know how much that inspired me and motivated me to, you know, try to help others.
So, that's awesome. Thanks. That's awesome to hear. Thank you.
Are you going to be at the conference in Memphis?
I have not missed a conference ever, so I will be there in Memphis. I'm actually be the third time this year I'll be back in Memphis, because we shot the Brian Banks movie down there. Mm. And so I've been in Memphis. That's where our director is from, Tom Shadyac. And yeah, the whole movie was shot in Memphis.
And last year's conference, I was just like, I had just been released, and, you know, so I was a kid acting like a kid, basically. It was just, everything was fun. You know, I've went through some things since then, but, you know, I'm looking forward to being there this year and meeting everyone that I didn't get to meet last year.
Yeah, it's such a great event. I mean, every year it picks everybody up because, you know, you do this work on your own or in your project, and some of the projects are really small and some of them are really struggling. And then you get together with everybody and like, okay, all right, we're all in this together. And I love every year I try to meet at least a few new exonerees. I don't know. And yeah, it just pumps everybody up to go back home for 364 days until we do it again.
Mm-hmm. Right. So if our listeners want to be like me and follow your every move, apparently, on social media, how can they do that?
Sure. So our website is CaliforniaInnocenceProject.org. And my personal social media, I tweet every day, and I love people to retweet to the governor. It's Justin O. Brooks, which is Justino Brooks, actually, but Justin O. Brooks. And on Facebook at Justin Brooks, you'll find me, California Innocence Project.
And so I only have one more question. So the California Innocence Project is within the university, but what are your primary sources for support, like financial support?
Yeah, so when I first got started, our biggest supporter was the rock band The Eagles. They actually gave us a chunk of money that helped us get started. It actually is a funny story because the way that money came from was I was at a cocktail party and I met a woman who said she wanted to help out the project. And she said her husband liked to help out too. And I said, what does he do? And she said, oh, he's a musician. So I said, oh, I'm a musician too. And I started bragging about my little coffee house gigs. And then I said, is he in any bands? And she's like, yeah, he's in a band. He also does solo stuff. And I said, oh, what, you know, local band? Oh, yeah, they're local. And they also, you know, they play a lot out. And it took me about four questions to find out her husband was in the Eagles. Wow. And Joe Walsh. So they ended up connecting with Joe Walsh, and who was one of my favorite guitarists. And they ended up getting us some funding to help us get started. Since then, we've been writing federal grants, state grants, doing fundraisers. We do a dodgeball tournament every year to raise money. We do lots of small events at people's homes. And then the law school gives us a lot of funding, and they fund my salary completely since I'm a law professor, and they give us space and all that. So it's a combination of a lot of resources. It's the hardest thing to do is raising the money. And nobody likes doing it, but you gotta raise the money for the train to keep the train going.
So if our listeners wanted to help support you, how can they do that?
Please go to CaliforniaInnocenceProject.org, and you can donate there. You could also see our full line of exonerate gear. Buy yourself a t-shirt or a long sleeve tee or a hoodie, or we even have baby onesies. CaliforniaInnocenceProject.org.
People like Justin amaze me. He has so much experience and he's done so many things to help other people. I was reading his bio on the California Innocence Project website and it's just incredible.
He does a lot of positive things.
So, until next time, thank you so much for listening.
Actual Innocence is hosted by DeMarco Carpenter and Brooke Giddens. Our original music is by Blake Maples. Our transcriptionist is Christina Judge. Our website guru is Sean Cole. Our master of social media is Cameron Taylor. And our amazing volunteer is Casey Weber. You can visit our website for bonus materials like transcripts, pictures, and calendars of upcoming episodes.